Mother's Day is almost here, and you can get her the most beautiful time-tested gift around. A watch she can wear every day for Movement. Whether mom's into classic dress watches, rare and refined ceramics, or tried-and-true bestsellers, Movement has something she'll love. And right now, you can save big on the best Mother's Day gift ever with up to 50% off site-wide during Movement's Mother's Day sale at MVMT.com. Again, that's up to 50% off at MVMT.com.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a Swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
This episode of Writing Excuses has been brought to you by our listeners, patrons, and friends. If you would like to learn how to support this podcast, visit www.patreon.com/writingexcuses. Season 12, Episode 45.
This is Writing Excuses, structuring a series.
15 minutes long.
Because you're in a hurry.
And we're not that smart.
To be continued. No, sorry.
I apparently am not Brandon. Nope. I am to be continued.
Yeah, I'm Mary.
I thought I was Dan.
Next week on Writing Excuses, I'll be Howard.
Okay, let's talk about types of series. Because series means a lot of different things. One of them is the Wheel of Time style series, which is kind of the Game of Thrones style series, which is this is one long continuous story, same as Lord of the Rings. We are going to break at certain parts, which might have climactic moments, but really the next part is going to generally take place very soon after and is going to be a direct continuation of the story.
Yeah. And I think those are in part come from Lord of the Rings, which was originally written as just one giant book.
Yeah.
And the publisher split it into three, and now we split books into separate pieces.
David Eddings, who was also very, you know, very popular in the post-Tolkien wave, he wrote a trilogy, and then they split them into five. Because they're like, we want five of these. And so in epic fantasy, I feel like we have a long history of just, we'll just cut it here.
Yeah. Now, one of the other kinds of series is what I call the episodic one, or what Brandon referred to earlier as the continuing adventures of. And this is something like Jack Ryan books. Repairman Jack, that yes, there's kind of a meta thread going on. There is progression overall, but really you're just, here's another great Repairman Jack story, and I can read them in whatever order, and it's awesome.
And one of the differences between the two kinds of series is the kind of protagonist you have. Mm-hmm. In the epic fantasy, you have characters who are going to change over time, and in almost pulp serial series, you have heroes that my friend Jim Zub calls the iconic hero, Conan the Barbarian.
Yeah.
Has Dirk lots of adventures. Pitt. Yeah, Dirk Pitt.
I'm going to disagree with you because my series, Glamorous Histories, is episodic. You can read each book individually. That you can read them out of sequence. But there is a long character arc. Jane changes over time. So it's not...
It's not hard and fast.
Yeah. But, I mean, I think I see that in a lot of them. You know, the October Day books also are the same thing, that each one is self-contained. You're right that there are absolutely ones where the hero resets at the beginning of the book, at you know, at the end of the book for the next book.
Or if they've had a little bit of character development, that just gets worked into the next book very easily. They say, Dirk Pitt was once married, but is no longer blah, blah, blah. Yeah. Like, you can read them in any order.
So it's fairer to say, then, that what we had defined as a dichotomy is not a dichotomy. There's a large range of these spaces.
There's a range.
I just like to make note of the fact that these iconic heroes, their stories, when you're building these kinds of series, often you're not telling a story about Conan. You're telling a story in which Conan takes heroic actions and other people have misery and joy and triumph and whatever else.
No, I really like that you bring this up, because when you've talked about it before, either on the podcast or with me, it's really, I like the term iconic hero, and it's made me understand things better. I think we may have at one point talked about Mad Max as iconic hero, where the movies are not about him as much as, you know, he rides into town, people are having these problems, he's along for the ride, and they change and grow, and then he rides off at the end.
Yeah. And just to be clear, this iconic hero type doesn't have to be, you know, this guy with all of the muscles, because Jessica Fletcher is an iconic hero in this mold. She's, you know,
a lot of the cozy mystery genre is this style of thing.
Now, we're missing one type of series that I want to get in there and mention, because this is very common in romance stories, which is the, you introduce a cast and each book is one of their stories sequeling after each other. You also see it in epic fantasy.
Like an Dragon ensemble Riders series Fern. Type thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this is a very interesting way to have every character have an arc, but to also give you more of the familiar that you wanted with a new arc in it each time.
Yeah. Sherry Priest did this with her Bone Shaker series, where the books are all in the same universe, but they are not connected.
That is the lean I am taking with the Schlock Mercenary stories, where, yes, I'm following the same company, but I have a different protagonist in each book.
Yep.
A different relationship character, a different, you know, statement character.
Yeah. I think just as a media example, The Wire, for those of you who watch that, each season, if you think of them in novel terms, each season was self-contained. And while there are recurring characters, it's a different story the next season.
So I want to turn this toward, away from the definitions and toward the actual structuring. If you were going to sit down, and when you have, to structure an entire series, how do you approach that? We'll talk later about what to do if you already have a book and you want to add, but let's just say you want to structure one. Dan.
Okay, so I'm going to use two examples here, my partial sequence and the Mirador series, because the one is heavily serialized and the other one is episodic. With partials, I knew where I wanted it to end. I knew what I was building toward. It was this grand epic thing where, you know, the human race was at stake and they needed to be saved, and I had all these nations and kingdoms and things. And I knew where I wanted it to end, and so I plotted out this massive arc and then basically cut it into three pieces. Whereas with the Mirador books, the cyberpunk, I knew the world I wanted the books to take place in, and I knew that many stories could be told about those characters. And so basically, rather than working out this giant story, I just went world-building and character-building, and I had this huge Bible worked out and then said, okay, within that framework, here's three stories I can tell. And so the focus in one was on plot, and the focus in the other one was on character.
You know, one of my favorite pieces of writing in my own work is Brandon's introduction to the Terraport Wars, where he says, the Terraport Wars, this, you know, second collection of Schlock Mercenary, is where Schlock Mercenary finally decides what it wants to be when it grows up. because that really was the point where when I first started the strip, I was thinking that I was doing Bloom County meets Buck Rogers in the 24th or 25th century. Too much Looney Tunes. where it was going to be episodic with iconic heroes. And then I realized that that's boring. I want these people to change. And as I started changing them, I realized, oh my goodness, this, why haven't I seen more of this in the things that I love to consume? You know, that's what I want to make. And it took me about a year and a half to get to that point.
And then you fell down the epic rabbit hole like I have.
I fell down the epic rabbit hole, but I knew as I was falling that I needed to be shaping these things with satisfactory beginnings, middles, and ends so that I could wrap covers around them and make money. And so the structure, this really is a place where form follows function. The function was create a saleable product, and the form that followed was a storyline that is between 6 months and 18 months long.
So I'm curious about how you do this, Brandon, because I have, like, I'm doing a duology now, which is the first time I've done two books that are paired, that are, you know, where you cannot read the second one without reading the first one, or right. Stepping in would be awkward. How do you handle it when you've got like 10 books that you're planning?
So here's my general process that I've kind of stumbled into, as we all stumble into our processes over years. I sit down and I build an outline for a standalone book. And then I add a little bit for what I would do with the rest of the series. But really, I write that first book. Hmm. This happened with Mistborn. This happened with Steelheart. This happened with Stormlight. Write that first book. Get it down. And then when I know, because I do discovery write a lot of characterization issues, once I have a book, I know solidly who these characters are and things like this. And then I build an outline for the rest of the series that is much more in-depth. By in-depth, I'm saying a page or two about each book. So it's not like I have 50 pages for each book, but having that in place gives me that structure. And then I can go back and revise the first book to match all the planning I've done for the rest of the series. And then I release the first book. And this has worked very well for me to kind of hybridize this. I want to have a plan for a series, but I want to be free in this first book. And it also naturally gives me this standalone with series potential feel that we really like having. At least I do. I like when you pick up the first book of a series, whatever it is, you read it, and it alone tells you a story and gives you a sense in small of what the entire story might be. And then you, if you like that, you can go on into the series. And if you don't, you at least have gotten an ending. But I do call this kind of the original Star Wars sort of philosophy, where movie one is a complete story on its own. Movie two really needs a third story to add to it to be a satisfying ending. And that's how you'll read this. You could read Mistborn on its own, satisfying ending. But book two and book three bleed together a lot more.
Yeah, I remember finishing Mistborn and thinking, how is he going to do a sequel to this? And reading the second one, I'm like, how is he going to do a sequel to this? Because it hits a satisfying ending.
Hey, writers. Are you thinking about learning a new language? I think exploring the world, experiencing other cultures, and being able to communicate with people outside your everyday experience lets you create richer, better stories. A great way to do that is with Rosetta Stone, a trusted expert for over 30 years with millions of users and 25 languages offered. They use an immersive technique which leads to fast language acquisition. It's an intuitive process that helps you really learn to speak, listen, and most of all, think in the language you're trying to learn. They also feature true accent speech recognition technology that gives you feedback on your pronunciation. It's like having a voice coach in your home. Learn at home or on the go with a desktop and mobile app that let you download and access lessons even when you're offline. And it's an amazing value. A lifetime membership gives you access to all 25 languages, including Spanish, French, Italian, German, Japanese, and, of course, Korean. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, Writing Excuses listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/today.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered.
Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get half gallons of delicious Kroger milk for $1.29 each. Then get flavorful Tyson Natural Boneless Chicken Breasts for $2.49 a pound, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Let's go ahead and stop for our book of the week, and then we'll talk a little bit about that idea. Our book of the week is Dr. McNinja. Dr. McNinja is one of my favorite webcomics ever. It started as a gag by a guy who just drew a doctor who was also a ninja and wrote a little gag strip about him. And like many webcomic artists in the early days, it spiraled out of control and became something awesome that the artist slash writer was not intending.
What are you defining as the early days, just out of curiosity?
Like late 80s or late 90s, early 2000s.
Yeah. I hate to tell you, but that is, for many people, a lifetime ago.
Yeah.
I know this.
Right. I think Dr. McNinja started a little bit after that.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
It is what I love about Dr. McNinja, it is that it is absurdist with a solid character that treats its absurdism realistically. When people show up riding raptors and shooting guns and chasing things, everyone in the world says, well, this is the sort of thing that happens. We treat this seriously, but the pictures are drawn to just make you laugh. The whole world plays it straight,
yeah.
And it is hilarious.
And one of the great things about it is, like you say, a lot of those early webcomics spiraled out of control and, you know, fell down the epic rabbit hole.
Mm-hmm.
And that broke most of them. McNinja hung on and actually made it work.
He did make it work. Christopher Hastings is the author of it, and he has colorists and people working with him. It's a team, but it just finished earlier this year. It finished 8 months ago at this point, but it's the first time I've had a chance to promo it. It is done. You can read it. It is wonderful. And so I highly recommend going and reading Dr. McNinja beginning to end.
Very cool. I had a thought with regard to structuring series that when you are building something big, it is super helpful to know the end that you are headed for. And sometimes it is tempting for us to say, well, there's no way I can describe the story of this series, you know, quickly enough to be in an outline and still have it be a series. How do I do this? And I was reminded of narratives that Dan Carlin has built into his discussions of the Punic Wars and World War I. And I realized, oh, you can look at World War I as the epic story of Europe going to war and discovering that technology has changed everything, and the war completely changes the political face of that continent forever. In two sentences, you could have an epic fantasy the size of World War I that ran for 20 books and didn't even scratch the surface of the number of things that went on there. By the same token, the Punic Wars, Rome going to war with Carthage, and at the end of it, Carthage is wiped completely off the map. And that's a very epic fantasy sort of thing. And it took 50 years. I'm trying to remember how long the Punic Wars were. And during that, we have Hannibal marching elephants across the Alps. These are epic fantasy sorts of things. And so for me, studying history and how a thin narrative thread will often get used to describe something huge is a great way to wrap my brain around putting a narrative thread on the series I want to build as a framework to hang everybody else's stories.
And if you didn't remember, Dan Carlin is the host of Hardcore History. Which we have promoed on the podcast.
For those not watching the live feed, Brandon just pointed at me because I scribbled in my notebook, which is usually a sign that I have an idea. And I did, but it was an idea about the novel that I'm working on.
Oh, wow.
That just unlocked.
Awesome.
So what you want to do now is not make Mary reveal the thing that's
Yeah. Well, that's good. I have a question. Usually when we're talking about sequels, we have this weird line to walk where readers are going to want more of the same, but different. My question to you is, when you're structuring your series, how do you give them the same but different? How much different do you go? Because I know Mary's gone very different with her series, for instance.
Yeah, so what I've done, for those who haven't read them, is with the Glamorous History series, the first book is a straight-up Jane Austen pastiche. And classically with a romance, what I would have done for book two is that I would have focused it on Melody, which is Jane's sister, and I would have married her off. And then book three, I would have focused on Miss Dunkirk. I was not interested in doing that. What I wanted to do, I liked Jane and I wanted to keep her as my main character. So I kept her as my same. And my different was that I used a different plot structure for them, for each book. What I'm doing with The Calculating Stars and The Faded Sky is, even though it's a duology, I have a different, the first book is structured with an event driver. So it's very much, you know, the adventure elemental genre. And the second book is very much milieu driven. And even though there's a character thing going on in both of them, I am focusing on a different aspect, a different type of driving incident.
No, I do this a lot too. I look at my sequel and say, okay, same characters, their problems and conflicts are escalating for their character arcs, but I want the things they're facing to hit a slightly different note so that you get the people you loved in the setting you loved with a story that feels enough different that you're engaged by it. What have you done for John Cleaver? Because John is a really interesting one for this regard.
John is, his series is one that is very heavily serialized. There is a strong continuity because the entire point of the series is how is he going to change from book to book and how is he going to grow? And so the points that are the same are basically him. And then the points that are different are the monster. There's a different monster every time. And so that's how I built those first three books is here's John, and we know that he is slowly changing and he's slowly turning into this different person. But, you know, we have a different monster every time that focuses on a different, you know, kind of serial killer behavior. The tricky part for me was coming back to it 3 or 4 years after the fact and writing the second trilogy,
mm-hmm.
because in that one, John was different. In a lot of ways, what that first trilogy about is John learns how to feel again. And so if I jumped right back into a second trilogy in which John could feel emotions now and react to them, he wouldn't be the same John that you read about in the first trilogy. He would not have that sense of familiarity and people wouldn't like it at all. And which is why I was never intending to write a second trilogy. And what eventually made that work for me was the idea that, oh, just because you can feel emotions now doesn't mean that your life is good. Emotions mm-hmm. suck, you know? Yes, he can love now, but that just means we can break his heart over and over again.
Yes, so, which you do.
You're very good at.
So, you know, finding that, so in that sense, what's similar, again, that point of that anchor point between first and second trilogy is awful things happen to John and you feel bad for him. And so he is still struggling with all of the same questions he struggled with in the first one. He still has those sociopathic tendencies. He still has this, you know, very dark outlook on life, but he is wrestling with a different question and has a different arc in the second one.
So building on this, we don't have a lot of time left, but I want to touch on this idea of you have a story. It was successful. You liked it. Now people want to read more and you need to come up with more. How do you do that, Howard?
There is a marketing principle here. The experience that I want people to have with the next installment in the series is I came because I wanted more of these things I love, and I came away having given me something that I didn't even know I wanted, but now I'm in love with. And it's magic when you can make it work. What you have to ask yourself, and again, it's a marketing thing. It happens across lots of industries, is what is it about the first book that made people want to pick up the second book? What's the driver? What are the things that they love? How much of that do I have to give them in order for them to be satisfied? What's the new thing that I can add that is going to hook them that still works with that? And that second question is, that's where all the invention and all the creativity and all the sleepless nights, for me, that's where they all come from.
Now, a brilliant example of creators who have asked themselves that question and gotten the wrong answer is in Indiana Jones.
Mm-hmm.
Because going from Raiders of the Lost Ark to Temple of Doom, what you can see there is Lucas and Spielberg saying, what did we love about the first one? And for them, it was all the tropes of the old pulpy serial movies. Let's play with those. That's not what audiences loved about the first one. And that's why Temple of Doom is, at least until Crystal Skull, that was the one that audiences didn't like. And so they went back and they reevaluated and said, well, what do audiences actually like? They like this particular character. They like these kinds of interactions. They like this kind of very specific Judeo-Christian focus on the mythology. And then Last Crusade was this mega hit because they correctly identified what the audience loved.
Yeah. So this is one of those things that becomes easy, albeit a little painful, if the book has already come out, because you can learn this by reading your Goodreads reviews. I recommend reading your 5-star and your 4-star ones. The 4-star ones are going to be the ones that tell you what to keep, because these are people that loved the book, but not quite
enough.
Right,
they had an issue with it or something.
They had an issue. And those are the ones where you're like, okay, I can get rid of those issues. Don't read your 3-star reviews or your 2-star reviews, because those are not your audience and those aren't going to help. Your 1-star reviews, when you're in the right mood, are hilarious, but again, not helpful.
Yeah, I think 1-stars are among the least helpful.
Yeah, they're hilarious.
What I will do is have an assistant go through read 3s and 2s to see if there are near misses for a potential audience in there. I stay away from reading them myself.
Yeah.
They'll report back to me if there are things I need to change. We're out of time. Mary, you were going to give us some homework.
Yes. What I want you to do is I want you to go to a book that does not have a sequel. This can be one of yours or a published one. And then I want you to write down 5 sequel possibilities. These can be a series or they can be individual standalones. Your choice.
You can try out several of the different ideas we talked about today.
Yeah.
All right. This has been Writing Excuses. You're out of excuses. Now go write.
Writing Excuses is a Dragonsteel production, jointly hosted by Brandon Sanderson, Dan Wells, Mary Robinette Kowal, and Howard Taylor. This episode was mastered by Alex Jackson.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get half gallons of delicious Kroger milk for $1.29 each. Then get flavorful Tyson Natural Boneless Chicken Breasts for $2.49 a pound, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.